Joining us now, the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our TSN Hockey Insider, Bob McKenzie. How you doing, Bob?
Excellent, boys. How you doing today?
Well, we're doing well. We're tracing your Twitter account is what we're doing, and we're waiting for the latest tweet.
You guys got to get a life, and so
yeah,
do I.
That's not much of one, but where do we stand on all this with the CBA and Phase 3 and 4 and return to play as of 5:05 p.m. Eastern time?
You know, I think they've done most of the heavy lifting on all the major issues. But, you know, there's still the devil's always in the details, and they're trying to nail down everything that would come with the Phase 3 return to play protocols, Phase 4, new CBA or extended CBA, transition rules, critical dates, all that stuff. And my understanding is that, to our knowledge, there's no reason for pessimism. And we are hoping that maybe today, tonight, would be the time that we hear the NHL and NHLPA have a tentative agreement on all of the above that we just listed. But, you know, whether it carries over in tomorrow, I mean, I've covered enough collective bargaining agreements and negotiations that just when you think you're almost there, they you know, extend it another day or two. So we'll see. But right now, there's every reason to believe they are going to get a tentative agreement done, and then it'll be up to the ratification process for the Board of Governors and for the full membership of the NHLPA.
So, Bob, we're looking at a lot of the details that have leaked out, thanks to you and others, and a lot of, you know, a lot of the stuff that you look at, it's got to leave a fairly bitter taste in the mouths of the players. I mean, you're looking at flat salary caps for the next two seasons. You're looking at next year where, you know, there's going to be, you know, something in the range of 20% escrow plus a 10% salary deferment, 30% off your check next year, Bob. I mean, what's your idea of the mood of the group of players that will be voting on this, and maybe how they should feel given the fact that they're absorbing so much of this loss due to COVID?
Well, I guess there's a lot to unpack there. What I would say is this: I don't think the players are happy, but why would they be? I don't think the owners are too smiley these days either, to be honest with you. And, you know, the economic industry of the National Hockey League that includes the players and the owners, it's been crushed. Let's not kid anybody. This is devastating to their overall, the economics of it. It just is. They're going to be out $1 billion somewhere along the line. And I think, you know, if there's a level of dissatisfaction with the players that goes above and beyond, I'm not sure I want to come back or not, it would be more along the lines of, this really just highlights the system that they entered into in 2004, 2005. And that is a hard salary cap system linked to the hockey-related revenue. And they only get, and over time, I think it started at 57 or 58%. Of that hockey-related revenue when they did the first deal in 2005. It's, you know, in 2013, it went down to 50-50. And I think that's where, you know, they're taking on the chin, but owners are to a large degree too. So nobody's happy about it, but, I mean, some people are saying, I've seen quotes from people saying, I talked to a player, they said 75% are against it, they're not going to vote to come back. And I'm like, well, God bless you if you think that the one person you spoke to represents the feeling of 75%. But the reality that you get into, and this is often true when we've had CBAs in the past, where the mood seems really owly, and I don't know if this is going to fly, I don't know if it's going to pass, and then it passes at like 75, 80, 85% or whatever the numbers are. And same deal here. It's like, okay, well, great. So if you don't want to vote for it, keeping in mind, too, we do believe that part of this return-to-play protocol will include an individual opt-out clause for any player that wants to exercise it. So if you want to not come back and play, you're entitled to do that. But if you want to vote no to the CBA and no to the return-to-play protocols, and it did get overturned on a majority vote by the membership, well, then whatever you think the economics are, as bad as they are for the next 5 or 6 years, which is what it would be under an extended CBA, you got to get a look at what would happen without a new CBA, without a return to play, and what the next two seasons are going to look like, especially, and I heard you guys talking about, you know, are people going to want to go to a football game where, you know, you have to spread out, and only 30% of the crowd is there or whatever. Get a load of what the NHL economy is going to look like in a gate-driven league. If we start this thing on January 1 and they don't have fans, or they only have 20% fans or 30% fans, if you think the economic hardship the players are going to face over the next 5 years of the doozy, wait till they get a look at what it would be for 2 years. And that goes double for the owners, who would be looking at, you know, $60 or $65 million salary caps, and the players would be looking at 50 to 75% escrow because the bottom's dropped out of the finances of the NHL industry. Simple as that.
Well, and it's, I mean, there's a lot of numbers being thrown around. There's a lot of jargon that I think the average fan either just doesn't get or care about. I think this is what it comes down to if you're a Leaf fan. Let's use this market and the Maple Leafs. The cap is not moving. So you had cap problems before COVID. Now you really got cap problems because that Matthews deal that you were hoping would have value years 3, 4, and 5 probably won't. And the Marner deal won't. And
no
the
doubt.
Tavares deal won't, because the cap's not going to be $90 million. It's still going to be $81.5 million. So how do they work around that? How does Dubas make this work?
Yeah, and I'm sure that he and Brandon Prenham and Lawrence Gilman and the brain trust of the Deuteronomy Police will be working on that consideration. Tampa Bay Lightning will be going through the exact same sort of thing, and that's where you got to make hard decisions, and that's where you got to look at, you know, and it'll be great for pundits like all of us to say they should do this, they should trade this guy, and they should trade that guy, and they should buy out this guy and do that. But, you know, a lot of it will become self-evident as you go along. But, you know, teams are going to make hard decisions, and a lot of the dollars are going to in the league are going to get reallocated to teams that don't have salary cap issues.
Yeah, so do you picture more kind of deals like the Marleau deal? Like we got to throw around picks just to get out of not necessarily just here in Toronto, because I don't think they've got many poison pills, but
no,
there's going
right.
to be teams that will run into that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think so, and you've got, you know, you do have the convenience of the Seattle expansion draft coming up in relatively short order, so there's lots of different ways you can try to offload, but at the end of the day, with the cap being as flat as it's going to be, you're going to have to, and then maybe going up very modestly in each of 3 years after, you know, the 2 years of a flat cap. You're going to have to make some hard calls and get creative. And the thing you have to realize is that, you know, other teams will have to do it, not all of them. But, and as I say, there will be some beneficiaries who are in a cap advantageous position that might be able to make really good value trades to bring in players that other teams can't afford. But, you know, you just kind of, and it all, you know, it dramatically impacts what UFAs, you know, what's it going to mean for Alex Pietrangelo, what's it going to mean for Taylor Hall, what's it going to mean for the RFAs, you know, what's going to be the all the new rules on salary arbitration in terms of what are the walkaway numbers. And, you know, so the CBA as it currently exists and will exist on the extension, it's got to be weaponized if you're a general manager and say, hey, you know, when Morgan Riley's up, well, see, because in the past, if you were the only team that was dealing with that and Morgan Riley's contract comes up and you're like, well, you know what, Morgan, we'd love to give you the home run ball here, but we can't. So we're going to have to get creative here, and you're going to have to play ball with us. And then, you know, your fear is, well, offer sheets and or I'll go to market, that sort of thing. And then, you know, but if half the league's in the same boat that you're in, it minimizes the threat level on losing players to UFA status or losing players on an offer sheet, although not entirely, because as I said, there's going to be haves and have-nots, and the haves are the ones that have cap space, and the have-nots are going to be the ones who don't.
So, Bob, it's July 2nd, 2020. My understanding, this was supposed to be a big day in your life. What were your original
yeah.
What were your original plans for July 2nd, 2020, before this little pandemic came upon us?
Well, you're right. I mean, you know, I'm not retiring, but I am kind of semi-retiring at some point. And this was supposed to be my last, you know, Stanley Cup final. This was supposed to be my last Stanley Cup playoffs and everything that goes with it. And so my normal routine is work like a dog on July 1 for free agent frenzy, drive up to the lake on right after my shift's over on my marathon shift on July 1st, Canada Day is over. And on July 2nd, put my feet up and say, well, I get the rest of the summer off on vacation. My contract expires the first week of September before Labor Day. I'm basically more or less done other than the things I've contracted to do for the future. World Juniors, handful of Leaf games, free agent frenzy day alone, trade deadline day alone, draft rankings, a few of those things. So I can tell you this, that in another universe, on this would have been my kickoff to my quasi-retirement summer vacation, and on the 5th of July, which I think is Sunday, myself and James Duffy and my son Sean and I think David Amber, we were all headed down to Cabot Links for 4 or 5 days of world-class golf, although not the way I play it, and and have a great trip to celebrate. And instead, I'm talking to you guys and plan on working tomorrow, plan on working next week, and then after that, we'll just have to kind of see where things are at.
Well, we're glad you're still plugging away here, Bob, because you've
been... Glad you are.
Yes, big time. And, you know, I guess it's Toronto and Edmonton as of now, unless something changes. And,
yeah, I should pin the tweet that I put up earlier where I talked about how fluid all this is. And doing play-by-play reporting, it's really top contract negotiations, CBA negotiations, trade negotiations, deadline day, free agent frenzy day. Those days are really challenging to report because what looked like it's, you know, 99.9% true 1 minute, like 10 minutes later, like, nah, that's not happening now. And so you're kind of doing, you know, our job now with social media and to be on top of things, to be right, but it's also to be on top of things. So we are doing play-by-play reporting of all this stuff, and it constantly is changing, as we saw with the Hub City. Oh, it's Vegas and Vancouver. No, it's Vegas and Toronto. No, it's Edmonton and Toronto. So be tuned.
Yeah, we will. We'll be tracking it, and hopefully it gets locked in sooner than later, and we can move on with our hockey lives and actually get to games at some point by the end of the month. But we'll leave it there. We'll do it again soon. As always, appreciate it. Thank you, Bob.
Awesome, guys. Have a great one.
There's Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. The showroom is open. They're taking the necessary steps to provide a safe environment for every guest. Visit Maple Toyota right next to Wonderland or buy online at MapleToyota.com. Like we said, the cap is what matters here, yes. Right? Like, so if you're a fan, you know, does it matter how much of the signing bonus Matthews is taking home? No, he's not sharing it with you. Does it matter how much money MLSE is losing? No, doesn't affect you whatsoever. But your team is going to be affected by COVID and by this new CBA if and when it gets to a point where they lock it in and the cap stays flat for another couple of years and it barely moves up beyond that. That's the risk you take. Looking back on it retrospectively, the Matthews deal, the Marner deal, to a lesser extent the Nylander deal because it wasn't as much money, and I don't think they were battling over that much more money. You know, I think they wanted him at like 6 or just below, and he wanted 7, 7.5, and ended up meeting at 6.8, 6.9. And the whole dance in retrospect looks ridiculous now.
It does.
But you look at the Matthews and the Marner deal, they paid a lot, you know, to get it done. They didn't get extra years, which is not a good look. Like Matthews only gave him 5, Marner only gave him 6. But the hope was and the plan was, okay, revenues keep growing, cap keeps going up. The Matthews deal, year 3, 4, and 5, looks like a pretty good deal. And the Marner deal, years 4, 5, 6, is maybe a bargain. You know, if these two are MVP caliber guys and guys that are lesser than them are getting paid as much or more. But now that's not going to happen.
No.
You're not going to get a bargain on those deals.
No. Don't forget, Hayes, like it was a few weeks before COVID hit that there was whispers around hockey. I remember there was some whispers that next year's cap was going to balloon to something between 84 and 88 million. Now, the 88 seemed far-fetched to me. It seemed way too optimistic. But the idea that it was going to go from the 81.5 and it was going to advance significantly was the feeling at one point this season, not too far removed from that shutdown. This is an absolute kick in the cojones to Kyle Dubas, right?
Yeah.
The idea that now, no, we're not going to 84. We're not going to 88. We're staying at 81.5 next year. We're staying at 81.5 the year after that. And then, oh yeah, we'll modestly raise it the year after that to 82.5 and the year after that to 83.5, which, by the way, it'll be 83.5 in 2023-24. That's the year Matthews' deal expires. That's the year Nylander's deal expires. So those guys are going to be making essentially half the cap. Those four guys on this team, unless they're traded, are going to be making essentially half the cap until the end of those deals.
Yeah, and based on this year's sample size, that didn't look so good.
No.
As we know. Although the players kept up their part of the bargain. You know, like Matthews
right.
was exceptional. Nylander was great.
But that's
Marner,
the thing.
Yeah, like
they
Marner had a slower start,
their,
but great year. So and it did matter. Yeah, in terms of wins and losses in the rest of the team, you know, the flaws were evident.
Exactly.
You know, there's only so much money you've got. And I've always thought the hard cap system was a terrible system. It damages your biggest teams, your most popular fan bases get hurt.
Yep.
And that's what's happened here again. Bettman's made that clear throughout his career. He's more concerned about Arizona than Toronto or Carolina than New York. But that's the way it's going to play out. That's the way it's going to happen. They're likely going to sign off on the deal, and there's no point in whining about it. This is the way it's going to operate. And they've got to find a way. They got to find a way to get kids in the system on the cheap.
Yeah.
And that's
Can't have enough.
You can't have enough. And that's why this Lafreniere angle is only going to get exposed that much more.
Yeah.
You know, if there was ever a year where maybe you want to pick that number one guy who's going to come in on the cheap and be impactful for 3 years, this would be it when we're moving into the next 3 years. You know, this we're on the horizon of cap hell.
Let me
basically
get this straight, Hayes. They haven't won a playoff series in 16 years, and you are now going to bat for
no,
the tank job.
No, I'm not advocating for that at all, but I'm saying if it happens,
okay,
it would be actually very advantageous, and even more so than usual. I mean, having a great young player, the first overall pick sells itself, but when you have no cap room and no flexibility on the horizon, it's even more valuable. But no, I've made it abundantly clear. The Leafs should not be thinking tank. The players won't be. The organization won't be. If you're a fan, don't be thinking that. Go on a run. Do what you can. They already have enough talent. You know, they have enough talent, but they got to – Sheldon Keefe better be the man now. Like, he better know how to work this engine and get this thing humming. And Dubas better know what he's doing here, because this is going to challenge every single person in the hockey world.
Oh.
How can you find a way? And I'm not convinced there's going to be all these other teams out there, teams with because there's a misconception that because a team has cap space, that means they're dying to acquire it.
Right.
They're not when your owner's Eugene Melnyk
exactly.
or Tom Dundon.
Exactly.
Or, you know, like, there's a lot of owners that are like, I'm not taking more money on, especially now.
No.
Like, I'm looking at the floor, dude. I'm not taking on your player because he's got 4.5 on his ticket. No
well,
way.
That's the thing. I mean,
I don't care how many picks you give me. I'm not paying them.
You're right. Because what's the crisis like this do? It doesn't hurt the Maple Leafs. I mean, it hurts them for these reasons we're pointing out about their cap problems, but it doesn't hurt their bottom line. It's a blip in their bottom line over the generations of wealth they've built. But this hurts the have-nots. This hurts the Tom Dundons. This hurts the Eugene Melnyks more than anything, because whatever revenue they're deriving from their meager markets, I should say relatively meager markets compared to Toronto, it's all gate, right? It's almost all gate. You know, they don't have big sponsorship accounts. They don't have big corporate bases. It's all about the gate. It's all about the fans. And if the fans can't show up, they're in trouble.
Well, but that also makes me wonder why it's got to be a locked-in cap structure for upwards of 3 or 4 years. What if fans are there next year?
Yeah.
What if there's a vaccine in 6 months and everything's back to normal in 2 years and you're making a ton of money?
Well, one of the reasons is the players essentially owe the owners, based off just this one little shutdown, shouldn't say little, this massive shutdown, they owe him like $500 million, Hayes. So this is working off the debt, essentially what this is. This is working off their debt, and it's going to take years. They don't want to, because they don't want to have to do it all in 1 year, right? This is a graduated working off of the debt is what this is. And the bottom line is there's a fear that if they don't come back at 100% capacity next season, and there's every reason to believe they won't, the debt is only going to swell, right?
Yeah,
they're going to go from owing the owners $500 million to owing the owners more like $1 billion. And then, you know, this is going to look generous. This little easing of the cap is going to look generous, and they're going to be in the hole deeper.
Yeah. Well, and it's not only the butts in the seats, which is a big part of it. It's a gate-driven league. But we're talking big business that is not willing to spend a lot of money right now either.
Right.
You know, so you're dealing with corporate partners who are like, yeah, maybe we'll catch you down the road, Gary.
Right.
You know, maybe I don't know if we're going to buy in right now. And I know that sounds crazy. The idea of if they return this summer, I think the ratings will be likely through the roof.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that you've budgeted for that. That doesn't mean major corporate partners have put money aside to spend in August as opposed to in June or in September or whatever. So I think there's probably some anxiety there. You know, is the money going to be there from the biggest corporate partners?
You're right.
And I don't know. I guess we may never find out. That may be behind closed doors, and that's, you know, the books would only be able to tell us that story. But that wouldn't shock me if there was some nerves.
No, but we'll see it in the, like, we may not find out. You're right. We may not find out in the micro. We may not find out which accounts aren't there for them. But we'll find out over the long haul, right? Because, you know, as you point out, like, the cap number is based off revenue. And we're going to find out from the players very quickly when they talk about their escrow number. Because the escrow number next year is going to be capped at 20%. As we pointed out, it could be a lot higher. And the fans don't care about that. But the bottom line is, it's the reason the cap is down. It's all intermingled here. And there's a shortfall of money. And the players have to somehow make it up.
Yep. That's what happens when you sign a contract. You're assuming that dollar amount's going to be there.
Yeah.
Years 1 through 3, 1 through 5, 1 through 8. But the owners and the league and the world doesn't know where they're going to be when you get to that point. And look where we are now compared to where we were 4 or 5 months ago.